Throughout history, Christians have created art, written books, and made music for worship, entertainment, and to express their faith in ever-increasing endeavors. And for the last six decades, they have created contemporary Christian music for the church and for the masses. Here at Legacy, we are counting down the finest works over these last decades. So join me, your host, David Lohman, as we celebrate CCM's greatest albums, right here on Legacy. That is right. Welcome to this, the very first edition of Legacy, CCM's greatest albums. I'm your host, David Lohman. My friends call me D-Lo. And on Legacy, we will be exploring the history of Christian music by listening to and reviewing the best albums recorded over the last six decades. Hear the music, meet the artist, and discover from industry executives, barrier-breaking pastors, and the fans exactly what made these albums so special and the music so enduring. So, stay tuned for more from Legacy, CCM's greatest albums. Again, I'd just like to thank you for joining me on this, the very first edition of Legacy, CCM's greatest albums. I want you to be able to get in touch with me at any time, so you can always send me an email at legacyccms1001@gmail.com. That is legacyccms1001. Now, in this first edition, we're actually going to kind of take a little sidestep away from what the show will normally be like. The most of the show will be a lot like the blog, which you can find very easy at legacyccmsgreatest.com. That is legacyccmsgreatest.com. The blog will actually have all of the information that we have, all of the reviews that we do, and commentary from the interviews that are done will also be included on the blog, so you can kind of get a combination of both a blog and a podcast. I want to keep them simultaneous. The reviews will be released about an hour or two after the podcast is completed and is released. We'll go ahead and release the reviews as well. So you can comment always on the blog. You can always go again to the website and you can find it and make comments there. We're going to be going through 1001 albums. And there's going to be a little history that we're going to tell in this very first episode. And that's kind of what we're going to be spending a little time on today. I also have a very, very special guest to be a part of this very first episode. When we talk about a legacy or somebody who is truly a living legend in the industry of Jesus music and CCM, one of the top names that come to mind most definitely is Benny Hester. And Benny will be my guest. In the second half of the program, we'll be talking about the concept of a legacy and what is it like to actually write songs that have a legacy behind them, that over the years, people will continue to love, support, sing, and still make an impact in people's lives. Sometimes we call those songs classic songs, but I call them legacy songs. Those are songs with a long-lasting legacy behind them. So today's show will be a little bit different, and we're going to take some time to describe, one, what is this podcast and what is the blog all about, and two, what does it really mean to have a legacy? What is the legacy term all about, and why did the show get the moniker or the name Legacy? First off, who am I, and why did I start this thing? My name again is Dave Lohman, and about 10 years ago, I had a little blog where I counted down my favorite 50 Christian albums of all time. But as that list began to progress, I decided that it was just too small of a number. So what I ended up having to do was kind of just say, well, I'm only going to choose one album from each one of the artists that I chose. And even that ended up being significantly too limited. Case in example, I chose Horrendous Disc from Daniel Amos. But quite honestly, albums like Doppelganger and Alarma and Darn Floor Big Bite should probably have been included as well in a top 50 and definitely in a top 100. So as time went on, I decided I would do maybe 100 and then maybe 200. Well, I eventually settled on 500. That's right. And when I was done with 500, I thought there's no way I could have left anything off. Oh, but I did. In fact, after I completed that 500, I did a little blog post called the Woulda Coulda Shoulda List. And it came to the conclusion that there were actually hundreds of albums that were left off. Well, over the last decade, not only has a lot of music come out that can be added to that list, but I've also expanded my own personal collection. So there are albums from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s that were not part of that list that probably should have been in as well. Albums that I'd always heard about, but I had never owned. So when I decided to launch this new version, I went ahead and I went with 1,000. And 1,000 just sounded strange. So I went with 1,001. And really, 1,001 came down to the fact that there was one album I just couldn't leave off, and I decided that I had to do it. Now, some people might even be wondering, are there really 1,001 albums that are worth discussing on a podcast or on a blog? Well, it should be noted that when I completed my first rundown of the list without numbering them, when I eventually did, I came out to 2,114 albums. So I had to start cutting. I whittled and I cut and I recut and I moved up and down and I took things off the list that were on the previous list and then I put them back and I added things that were never on the first list and I added them in, then cut some of them off, and it really just became difficult. In fact, I started this process in 2019. That's why there is a cutoff point of 2020. Every album had to have been released before January of 2020, so that only goes through 2019. I spent almost an entire year, in fact, it was over a year, almost 18 months, whittling it down to 1,001. And even about a week or two ago, there were albums that I took off the list, a couple albums that I wanted to add on to the list. So, suffice it to say, through that 1,001 albums, we will be talking a lot about the history of Jesus music and CCM. Part of this whole discussion is really about this great legacy of a history that we have. So hopefully those of you that have been around or those that are new to the industry itself, those that are new to the music, those who are just kind of discovering maybe what should I go back into history and try to find with the rise of digital and the re-release of LPs, vinyl, and thrift shop workers who are finding great albums hidden away in dustbins. This is your opportunity to hear and discover new music to you. But there are a couple rules, and I think that's most important. That is why this is going to be what I call a pinned podcast. I'm going to recommend that everybody listens to this podcast first before they go and start listening to any of the other future ones. In fact, I almost think it'd be best off if you take everything in order. It's one of the reasons I did a countdown. That's right, we're going to be counting down from 1,001 all the way to 1, and it's going to take a little while. But there's a couple things you need to know that's super important about this list. But first and foremost, the most important thing to know, it's my list. I compiled it. I created it. I have friends. I have industry people that I talk to that have done similar lists. I looked at some of the comparisons of CCM and HM Magazine. I looked at some of those lists. I've looked at online lists just to get some ideas. But ultimately, these are my lists. This and the entirety of the list comes from my collection. And we'll get to that in a moment and why that is super important. So going in, know ahead of time that this is my list. One, it will really help your mental health. You won't have the, why is this album ranked higher than that album? Oh, those aren't really Christians. Oh, why did you leave out this artist? And trust me, there is an artist that was left out that I'm sure some people are going to complain about. But it's important to know that the rules of creating this list are rules that I created for myself. And as a result, I am the only one who can break those rules. And I did. All right. So what are the rules? And it's very important. There are 10 of them. First, I have to own the album. In most cases, and I think in most people's lives, that would be kind of a limiting factor. But you kind of need to understand that I own over 10,000 Christian albums. So if I don't own the album, I can't give an honest review. So it's not included in the countdown. I did not break this rule. Every single album in the countdown is an album that I own. The genre that's commonly understood as the definition of CCM was ultimately too limiting, but it was also the easiest way for things people to understand what this list, what this podcast is really all about. So, know going in that there are going to be some albums and some artists that are going to cause the reader's confusion as to why they're included. Please understand that this is not a doctrinal or theological show. I am not going to make painstaking decisions about whether or not somebody is truly a Christian. And there are some rules about that we'll get back to in just a moment. So, I painted with a very broad brush. I had no theological standards. I didn't force them upon the artist for whether or not they would be considered for inclusion. If I limited the list to only those that I share some sort of theological purity with, I could easily go back to a top 50. When you listen and when you read the blog, you will see some albums that have an asterisk. These are important to understand. If you do not understand the asterisk releases, you're going to have some struggle with the albums that are included. These titles are not included because of any personal commentary, profession, or support of Christianity by the artist that made that album. Actually, though, they are included because those artists and those albums were embraced by young Christian rock and alternative fans back, especially in the 80s. Now, there's a scene in an upcoming movie called Electric Jesus that actually does a great job of describing the albums and the artists in question. Again, these albums are included because of the fan base, us, those of us, especially those in the 80s and the 90s, who embraced mainstream secular artists who we felt had some sort of either Christian or biblical or spiritual perspective in their music, and we embraced those artists. Those artists also had a tendency to be sold at some of the more cutting-edge Christian bookstores. So as a result, they are included in this list. If you're bothered by it, you can just skip on to the next release. Best of albums are not included. Now, this should be a no-brainer as to why. But there's really two reasons. One, it's kind of hard to compete with somebody's best 10 or 12 songs, and you have just written 10 or 12 songs separately. So taking somebody's collection of their best music over the years really isn't a fair way to judge an album. And remember, these are the best albums. This is important, and we'll get to that in a minute as well. Also, best ofs are very disjointed. You have an artist who has a career that spans two decades, maybe 20 years, and you hear a best of, and the musical genre styles, the lyrical content can be so diverse, and the album is not cohesive. It doesn't make for a great album. It can make for great listening, but it doesn't necessarily relate or correlate to a great album. Live albums are not included because they serve as a best of. Sort of. Quite often a live album has worked as a different form of a best of, but really, a small handful of live albums are included in this list because these albums were so outstanding and they had such a lasting and significant impact on the industry, on Jesus music, the Jesus movement, and on CCM as a whole. There was no way to avoid some of those albums. There's only a handful, but there are a few live albums that are included. There is no traditional Southern gospel included in this list. Remember rule number one, I have to own it. It would be so limiting for me to include any Southern gospel since out of my 10,000 albums, maybe a handful, five, at the most a dozen, would be traditional Southern gospel. Simply another style I was into. And also, my goal was to keep this within the Jesus music CCM genre and not all that encompasses Christian music. And for that reason, number seven is there's no traditional Black gospel included. And it's for the exact same reason as why the Southern gospel music is not included. There are plenty of hip-hop, urban, soul and R&B artists that have made the list, but traditional black gospel or choir black gospel simply would not be included. It would not be fair to the overall list, and my judgment of those albums simply would not be adequate. Number 8. This may be the most controversial one of all. There is no modern worship music. Oh no. And that means there's nothing from the past 20 years that could be included. Well, some may think so, but there is still plenty from the last two decades. But I will say, there is a kind of an unwritten rule about the use of worship music in a list like this. It's not fair to have simply a collection of songs that are popular that are sung in church put onto an album and then that be reviewed in the same way as an artist writing a separate work of art. Quite often, almost all worship albums are not done by the singular artist, or the songs are not all written by that singular artist, and it's simply just an unfair assessment of music to include modern worship. Now, don't get me wrong. There are going to be artists that would fall under the heading normally of modern worship music that are included, but the albums included are those which do not fit within the genre that we call modern worship music. Number 9, the placement in the countdown. Super important to only a handful of people who will go crazy because their favorite album was somewhere around 710 and they think it should be number 1. Really, when it comes right down to it, they're not as radically or firmly defined as other lists might be. Now, you could probably say that number 944 is better than 945, or maybe you think number 945 is better than 944. And quite frankly, you could probably make the case that number 372 is just as good or better than a song that, or an album that is maybe 185. Here's the deal. I put the list together based, again, on my opinion, using a whole lot of outside side resources. But I would say that for the most part, that dozens of spots one way or the other is where I believe those albums should fit. And I'll be honest with you right now, it's taken me over a year and a half, and I am not perfectly satisfied with the placement of every album. And I'll also be a little honest too, that sometimes I play certain albums mainly because I think that it will cause more discussion. People will go, I wonder why that one was rated so high, or why was that one rated so low? Oh, that artist kind of is in the same world as this other artist, and they make for a great interview. There's really so many reasons why the numbers ended up where they're at. But I will say, once we get to about number 200, 250, those numbers are completely legitimate. So, getting down to number 10, and this may end up being the most confusing. And when we go next week and start with the actual countdown, number 1001 is a description of number 10. An amazing song does not mean an amazing album. I think many readers and listeners are going to be quite surprised to discover that some of the biggest albums in the history of CCM are not highly ranked. In fact, there's probably some of the best-selling albums of all time that don't even make the list. Now, a lot of sales do not come from the best album, but they'll come from a song. A particular song is a monster hit. Everybody goes out and buys that album. So, just because you have a great song doesn't mean you make a great album. And the purpose of this list is just to discuss the very best albums in the history of CCM. Not necessarily the most popular or those who had the biggest singles. I can only imagine what people are thinking as they listen to this. The real and the ultimate purpose of this blog and of this podcast and anything else that we do involved with legacy is to celebrate amazing art, musicianship, the creativity of a Christian worldview found within music. The author of the book of Hebrews talks about this cloud of witnesses that have gone on before us. They had set the table and they prepared the way. Isaac Newton actually kind of borrowed that exact same imagery when he talked about standing on the shoulders of giants. This is celebrating and recognizing the great accomplishments of predecessors who broke barriers, who also built bridges. And they created a sustainable art form for generations. This looks back joyfully and reverently at those artists. But I also will add, it looks back honestly. Not every artist and not every album is perfect. Some songs are not that great. Some albums aren't that amazing. Some artists have had a pretty tough life. Some have been found in great sin. That's not what this is about. We will be a place of celebration. We will comment, we will discuss, and I want you involved in it as well. But for the purpose of this podcast and for the corresponding blog, this will be a time of celebration. So why legacy? Where does that word come from? Why do we need to have a name like legacy? Where did it come from? Why did I choose it? Well, you know, it's one thing about reading the Old Testament, which I truly, truly love, is that you'll see that the people of God would have some sort of an event take place. And then when that event was finished, they would think about what God did for them there. And then they would name that location, that hill, that mountain, that plain, that town, after what God had done. And they did that so that when, as nomadic people, they traveled back through that area, the fathers could say, you know why they call it this? Because God provided here. Do you know why this was called this? Well, God wrestled with Jacob. And so Jacob named that area a certain name. It was to help us remember. It was to leave behind a legacy. In Deuteronomy, we are told that we should pass along the word of God to our children. And I think it's a beautiful passage where it talks about, you know, you shall wear it around your wrist and on the frontlets between your eyes, and you shall talk about your Lord your God when you walk along the way, when you're having dinner, those sort of things. It's leaving a legacy for a future generation. When we celebrate communion, what are we told to do? Do this as often as you do this in remembrance of me. It is a legacy passed down as often as we do this. We're to remember, we're to remember, we're to remember. When the children of Israel passed along into the Holy Land, into that promised land, they put a small little altar of 12 stones, and that 12 stones was to remind them of what God had done. That is leaving a legacy. And we come back, we'll be talking to Benny Hester, a true legacy artist in CCM, about what that means to have a legacy and to be a legacy. So stay tuned for more right here on Legacy. To reach out or be a part of Legacy, you can email me at legacyccms1001@gmail.com. That is legacyccms1001@gmail.com. Or you can always go to legacyccmsgreatest.com. That's legacyccmsgreatest.com to follow the blog and comment on each one of the blog posts. You can also follow on Twitter at Loving Our Legacy. That is at Loving Our Legacy for Twitter. And then finally, join the Legacy community on Facebook. Just search for Legacy CCM's Greatest Albums. And we'll be right back with more from Legacy. 10 years ago, I think we talked for the first time on the phone, and I'm sure there were actually plenty of times that you wouldn't remember, but I remember at, let's see, backstage at Melodyland a couple times.
Oh, yeah.
That's for concerts, and also an in-store at Maranatha Village.
I love that place, yeah.
Maranatha Village was the best, and when I was the manager there, we did an in-store
for the
Frontline album.
That's right, yeah.
So, yeah, and then, of course, you came to a Frontline sales conference when I was at Frontline. So, and many of little tiny meetings here and there, and I'm glad to have you on the very first, what will be the very first episode of Legacy. And I'm not going to take a lot of time today. I'm going to have you back on a couple times later to talk about specific albums, because I think I looked at the list and you have like four or five albums that made the countdown. So there'll be plenty of time to talk about those ones. But today, kind of just want to piggyback on our conversation we had a couple weeks ago on the phone, and really kind of just talk about Legacy. Earlier, as I pre-recorded some of the stuff for the show that I'll edit this into, we talked about how important it is that we as Christians, Christian men especially, we need to be leaving a legacy for those who follow after us. Do you just have any thoughts on even the concept, since you did an album called Legacy? It must have been a kind of an important concept to consider to put that name on an album.
It was. And my kids were 6 and 8 around the time that I recorded the album. And I became very conscious that they did a lot of the things I did. You know, if I said something a bunch of times, they would say it. If I if I said, oh, that's a little goofy, you know, the way that person acts or something, they would take on that same, attitude about them and go, oh, Dad, they're kind of silly, aren't they? You know, and so I started realizing that the things I did really did matter. And I never thought about a legacy in a sense of writing songs, because I wrote songs because they were heartfelt and they were about either something that I had experienced myself or maybe something that I observed about another person or something that they were going through. And so I wrote those things down, and each one, like in the scripture in Joshua, is sort of like a stone. If there were 12 stones, well, this was one. And, you know, I wrote those tunes just thinking, well, you know, it's like a marker. And this marker, you can always look back on. It's a moment in time, and you can look back on it and maybe, and I was thinking of my kids, maybe see what your dad was thinking about then. Yeah. And so,
One thing I think it's interesting to consider, that when it comes to artists, not many of them really can look back with what I'm going to be using as the term, a legacy song. You know, Don Francisco had He's Alive, and you know, Second Chapter of Acts, definitely the Easter song, and maybe a couple other, Which Way the Wind Blows and a few others might be considered legacies, but most artists would love to have that one legacy song. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in the world you have two, in terms of When God Ran and Nobody Knows Me Like You. Those are songs that 40 years later, people still reference those songs. People are still doing those songs. When you write a song like that, is there a thought that this one might be a little more special than some of the other songs that I've written?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, I'll just kind of give you the answer that comes to me, because, you know, when I first started writing songs, I didn't really think about them lasting forever. I just thought about, I will do the best job I can. I'll write the best song I can. I'll make it meaningful and intelligent. And those are the things I wanted to do. And as I started releasing albums, and I had one hit, then I had five, and, you know, I started seeing that it affected people in a tremendous way. I got over my lifetime, I've just got thousands and thousands of emails and messages and letters and notes handed to me. And I realized that what I was writing had an effect on someone's life, and in a big way. It wasn't small. and it either brought them to God or it might have gotten them through some difficult moment. So, you know, I didn't, when I first wrote When God Ran, I have to say, I'm really not a preacher. I'm not a pastor. I'm a songwriter. And so I think of the things that I would do. When I wrote When God Ran, I was serious. When I write the first sentence of a song, I think of that being the most important sentence in the song, when you, your very first words. And I was describing God. I was describing how powerful he was, because by the time I got to the chorus, I was going to show the juxtapose, you know, that God was not only powerful and omnipotent, he was tender and merciful. And the same with Nobody Knows Me Like You. I wrote that song driving across the Bay Bridge into San Francisco. And I didn't have an instrument, I didn't have a guitar. And by the time I reached the other side of the bridge, I had the first verse and I had the chorus of the song, and I knew it was something special. So did I know that they would be what they are now? No, I don't think I knew that, but I knew I had something that would touch people's lives. I was very sure of it.
And those really too are legacy songs. Those are songs that have stood the test of time, but have also stood the ebb and flow of popular music that we have seen over 30 years or so, how much music has changed, and yet certain songs still seem to resonate with people, and people are still performing these songs. But when you're writing a song, let's go back to the concept, if we can, to a legacy. Was it important to you as a father writing songs to know that your children are going to hear these songs and experience these songs, and maybe their children's children's children? Mm-hmm. Hey, my great-grandfather, mm-hmm. Benny Hester, was a songwriter. Here's his music. Sure. Does that ever cross your mind? Do you have a concept of saying, you know what, this is something that is being passed down potentially generationally?
I think you have that hope. But, you know, what you want, or at least me, what I want, I can speak for myself, is I just want to write a song that will really mean something to you. And you want to revisit, and you want to hear it again. And then you'll want to hear it a year from now, and 10 years from now, and maybe 50 years from now. That would be great. You know, and if that happens, and with a lot of my songs, people have re-recorded them and they've become number one again. And When God Ran's been recorded a lot of times, and in different ways, and I really enjoy it. I knew that it was a very important song, but you never know how people will receive it until it's out there and that choice is made by the listener.
And isn't it one of the great joys of music, though? Because for me, one of my all-time favorite Benny Hester songs is a song that I don't hear a lot of people talk about, which is Goodbye Salty. Actually, I think that song is an incredible song. Both, I think, musically is really interesting. It doesn't sound like anything else. It's a very unique song, the way that it starts, flows, ends. But it also has this message that you, at first listen, you may not get. And then listening to it a few more times, you start to find out what's really going on behind the song. And when I talk about legacies, that's kind of what I'm thinking about, is there are certain songs that have built up over time to actually have real meaning for people. It's more than just nostalgia. Mm-hmm. These are songs that impacted their lives. There are Facebook groups, and someone will put a song, put a YouTube of a song, and people will say, that song changed my life. That, as an artist, must be exciting to hear. Someone actually writing you a note or an email saying, your song changed my life.
I have them piled up right now on my computer in front of me that I feel guilty I can't answer everybody who writes me. I mean, it's great to know that your song will touch people. And like the ones you mentioned, and I appreciate it. I like that. Goodbye Salty. And I like Rubber Canoe. Seems like there's sort of a theme there. But, you know, the metaphors, I've always written, you know, songs that are metaphors and telling you a story about one thing, but it's much deeper and there's much more to it.
But I guess ultimately what I'm hoping to kind of get a grasp of from an artist's point of view, when you are not separating being a father and being a musician, all of these things make up who you are as an artist. So who you are as an artist also impacts how you are as a father. And so you were talking about having the 6 and the 8 year old when you're making the album Legacy. Are there times where you felt like you were really specifically writing for your children as any of your audience in your songs, or for potential people that will be generationally Hesters as time goes on?
Legacy, that song, I did mean for my kids and their kids and on into the future. And I meant it for everyone. It wasn't just for them, but yes, a big part of the purpose was, you know, for my own kids. Footprints was really for my own kids. These things were done by you. That song was really just to let them know that I can only take so much credit and I can't take all of it because God did this in me. You know, I didn't set out to do it. I just, you know, that was the road that I followed.
Yeah, and I find it interesting you brought up the Joshua and the 12 stones and and part of the discussion, and you were told that, hey, as often as you do this in remembrance. That's a legacy.
Right.
We have stories about how they named certain cities or certain things by what took place there, so that as they traveled, which you're talking about, you know, a much more nomadic people in the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
When they would travel back through an area, they would say, oh, this hill was called this because this is what God did here. This city was named this because this is
That's
what
right.
God did here. And each one of these things kept pointing back to God. I kind of have done that in my life. I started collecting Christian music back in about 1974, 75, when I got my first album, which I think was one of those Maranatha collections, Maranatha 2, 3, or 4, whichever one. I think it was one that had a Daniel Amos song on it, and I just had to have that. But that was when I first started collecting. But I noticed that, and music, I think, does this more than anything else. You hear a song, it doesn't just do something to you. It could put you back into a time. There's times I hear a song and I go, junior in high school, driving on my way to work. That's amazing what music can do. In terms of a legacy, that has ingrained in me what God was doing in my life as a 17-year-old driving in my car to work.
And David, it does the same for me. Like if I revisit a song that I wrote in a certain year, it brings back a memory to me of where I was at that time and why I wrote the song. And, you know, and I remember a lot of those letters and comments and things like, oh, that's someone pulled over to the side of the road and in tears, they listened to the song and they changed their life in a big way. You know, I really appreciate those things. And something else, like when I, you know, every time I started a new album, I always looked for a cornerstone song. It's the song that, you know, I always just thought of it as the cornerstone for the album. Sometimes it would change, but usually it was the same tune. And other songs and the whole mosaic of an album, of course, now it's all about a song and how quickly you can get it on the iTunes charts and, you know, all that. And that's great. And I just had Nobody Knows Me just went to number one on the iTunes charts in Canada. Someone recorded a new version of it. And, you know, and so that was just a few weeks ago in March. But, you know, I looked for that cornerstone song. The mosaic kind of goes around. It goes a lot of different other places, but it's the anchor of that album. And I really always thought of looking for that particular song. You were asking me, are there songs that stand out, or there's a song, you know, do you know it's going to be a hit before you release it? For me, I've always been amazed that I can do something with my guitar in a small room with the door closed, and it will go around the world. I can write the song by myself, alone, and I have the feeling about this tune going all over to millions of people. And I do have that sense, you know, of connecting with people.
Yeah, I know that there's times where talking to a lot of different artists, you know, they'll get an impression that this song may mean something. And quite often, which talking to a lot of artists over the last few months, as I'm trying to build up getting some of these interviews done, mm-hmm. how many of them have the same conversation of, that song wasn't a hit at all, but I can't do a concert without people demanding I do this song. It wasn't a hit, but for some reason,
right.
it resonated more than some other ones. And I think of like Goodbye Salty is one of those songs. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't a top five. You know, nobody knows me. Mm-hmm. You took off mm-hmm. and then they played Crisis Solid Rock, the reworking of the hymn. And, mm-hmm. and you know, Goodbye Salty and Rubber Canoe kind of get missed on. Yet there are songs like that that people, you haven't done a show without yeah. doing those songs because people demand to hear those songs.
When I write a song also, I know there are songs that serve different purposes. Like Rubber Canoe was a song that was just an instant smash hit yep. on college campuses. It just immediately took off like wildfire. Other places, people didn't notice it as much. You know, they went for, you know, Nobody Knows Me, or they went for other tunes, you know. But there are particular tunes that fill that need. And, you know, I look at them as just like a different part of the palette of what you're doing. I really do believe that albums will probably be important again as a texture, like a painting. They haven't been for a while, but I really do believe that people will start wanting to take that journey again and drop the needle or push play and let it play and take you through a journey. I always thought of albums as that, you know.
Yeah, and I think that the greatest albums, the ones that are going to be part of the list that we're going to be talking about on this show over the next several years, there's a difference between an album and a collection of songs. Uh-huh. You know, this is just the 10 latest songs I have happened to have written uh-huh. versus, you know, you listen to something, and I'm going to take somebody like Terry Scott Taylor did an album called Knowledge and Innocence that dealt with both his father's ailing health or grandfather's ailing health and the loss of a child uh-huh. in a miscarriage. And that theme shines through. And yes, there's individual song, but the way he married those songs together and brought it together, that's an album. You don't go and just listen to one song from that album. Right. You listen to that album.
Yeah, it always drives me a little crazy. And of course, I understand the need for it. But like a best of album is always a little tough because you're just pulling these songs from thin air from different times in your life. And, you know, they're put together and people say, oh, that's my favorite song. That's my favorite song. I didn't like that one, but I love that one. And, you know, but when you hear the whole album together, there is a texture. There is there's something that ties them all together.
Yeah, like I couldn't imagine ever listening to Heath Green's "For Him Who Has Ears to Hear" mm-hmm. without listening to it in its entirety. There's significantly a flow that's important that takes place on that album, and I think some of those great yeah. albums of that era, Matthew Ward's "Toward Eternity," kind of comes to mind. I think one of the best from that time period was Eric Nelson and Michelle Pilar mm-hmm. did the album Misfit, and it was just you can't just take a song from it. It is a cohesive package. It's like taking a book and saying, I'm going to read chapter 2, and then I'm going to skip to chapter 7. I think great albums don't allow you to really do that. You kind of have to listen to them in their entirety.
That's what
in a focus.
And that's great. You mentioned Eric Nelson because, you know, I became a Christian in Las Vegas. My ministry started there. I really wasn't about really playing in churches. I didn't really think of it that way. when I became a Christian, the only thing that I could really think of, and it was my whole motivation for writing music, was to reach people who would never come to the church doors, who didn't understand the lingo that, you know, the way that Christians talk. They maybe just wouldn't come around those kinds of situations. I wanted to go where they were, and I wanted them to catch on to this song, and somewhere in it, I just wanted it to be appealing enough that they would want to hear it, and they would want to, you know, whether they would see me live or hear it on a recording, you know, that meant a lot to me, and it was the driving thing. But Eric Nelson, I opened up my first Christian concert that I ever did was I opened up for Eric Nelson in Las Vegas at a big church there at Trinity Temple, and he came back to California and started telling people about me and what was going on, and the fact that we were seeing hundreds and hundreds of people come to the Lord. Like, I would play concerts in parks and all kinds of different venues there in Las Vegas, but very rarely were they in church venues. And I did find a great church, and I ended up playing in my own church probably thousands of times, but, you know.
So are you saying that you did concerts on the streets of Las Vegas?
Yeah, I would be saying that. Yeah, I did that. You know, Streets of Las Vegas, that song really is just my testimony. It's very simple. There's nothing complicated about it. That's just a true statement about where I was at the time and what came about, you know.
Well, we are going to have Benny Hester back many, many times as we talk about his different albums from Be a Receiver up through Perfect and a lot of albums in between, and how many great songs we've had. Just want to take a moment just to say, hey, finally, thank you. We finally have hooked up and had a chance to talk about these things and record this. And you can be part of this first podcast. I'm super excited. You were one of a handful of artists when I first did the blog 10 years ago that reached out to me and said, hey, I really love what you're doing. This blog is great. You understand my music. You understand the other people that I worked with making this music. And so I'm excited that I could actually have you be a part of this first podcast to discuss this this new venture with Legacy.
Well, I'm very honored. And the fact that you called your new venture Legacy is just terrific. I can certainly relate to that. And, you know, it's just it's something that someone needs to do. You really have the heart for it. You know, not only I'm sure the podcast is going to be a terrific success, but you are a great writer. And I've read many of your reviews of other people's album, and they are good, they are fair, and they're really insightful. You really have a great handle on that. And very few people know as much or have the background that you have to be able to write those things and say them in a way that they're meaningful.
Well, thank you. And with that, I'm going to say goodbye for now. But boy, in a few weeks, I'll be contacting you again. We'll come back and talk about the whole album Legacy. For those that are unfamiliar with it, all you have to do is listen to the beginning and the end of each episode, and you will hear the song Legacy, at least bits and pieces of it, as Benny was kind enough to allow me to use that song as a theme. And I think it really is a fitting theme for what we're trying to do. But Benny, thank you so much for being a part of this first episode. And I really, really, I can't wait for years down the road that you and I are going to have more conversations and chats about this amazing music that you have left a legacy for us, the Christian music fan.
Thank you so much, David. I have enjoyed this. Thanks. Looking forward to those in the future.
All right. God bless you, Benny.
God bless you.
All right, thanks.
So long.
Talk to you soon. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
On Christ the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. All other ground is sinking sand. Hides his lovely face, I rest on his unchanging grace. Through every high and stormy gale, my anchor holds within. ground in sinking sand.
For this, the very first edition of Legacy, CCM's greatest album, I'm your host, David Lohman, and again, I'd like to take just a moment to thank Benny Hester, a true legacy and legend in the history of Christian music, from Jesus music all the way up until the present. We really do appreciate him being a part of the program today on this, the very first episode. If you would like to be a part of the program, you can always send me feedback at legacyccms1001@gmail.com. That is legacyccms1001@gmail.com. Also, please leave a review on the Apple Podcast or any of the podcast catchers that you grab the show from. Give it a 5-star review. It helps us move up the charts and introduce people to it. Obviously, if you can share it on Twitter and Facebook, it's always appreciated as well. So until next time, when we begin the actual countdown, again, the name is Dave Lohman. Thank you for joining me right here on Legacy.
See.